All right. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this evening's Monroe City Council meeting for April 2nd, 2013. We'd like to, at this time, call the meeting to order and ask that Edie, if you would take roll call, please.
Councilperson Garen.
Here.
Cuddeback.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Gamble. Hanford.
Here.
Student Representative Pirano.
Okay, I am aware that Councilmember Gamble mentioned last week that he would not be here today or this evening because of the spring break. I wish him well on his vacation. With that, please join me now for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, this part of our meeting has been set aside for the community as an opportunity for citizens to speak to City Council on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter. We would like to ask that you limit your your comments to 5 minutes, and we'd also appreciate your name and address for the record. I do have a few folks that have signed up this evening. First of which is Mr. DeBelli.
Hi, I'm Eric DeBelli. My address is 15325 160 8th Avenue. We're trying to Southeast Monroe, Washington. I'm here to talk to you about the upcoming levy for the hospital. On April 23rd, the voters in Snohomish Hospital District 1 will have the opportunity to help the Valley General Hospital retain its services and move to the next level of community support. Valley General Hospital has entered into a partnership with Evergreen Hospital, which brings capacity and expertise to our area. Evergreen Hospital also is a public hospital, so no money comes with this partnership. To fully explore the opportunities this partnership brings, Valley General Hospital first needs to shore up its operational expense. This levy will provide the hospital the means to cinch up its operations. This is where we need your help. Valley General Hospital employs over 500 people in Monroe, not to mention the side businesses and pharmacies that benefit from the hospital. It's a very good business for our community, and it needs our support. Earlier today, I sent you all an email with information regarding the levy, and I'm hoping that you all can find it to support the levy. So I'm not sure what the protocol is. If you wanted to take a look at these endorsement forms, or if that's acceptable. I hope for your support.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Michelle? Mr. Gary, can you help me?
Michelle, do you want to share?
No, I'm good.
There you go.
Can everyone see me? My name is Michelle McKenzie, and I'm here to talk about a very important issue for the Rotary Field bathrooms. And I've been involved in Merrill Fleet since the very beginning. I was the first player to sign up in 1999, so many years ago. I just want to thank you for the city and the Rotary to start up the field in 2009, but to allow us to play on a handicapped accessible field that is so much easier for people like my friend Mike to play on. Now, however, one of the issues is the bathrooms. you'd think the porta potties would be handicap accessible. It's just bigger, but it's not. You wouldn't want to have an accident. And also, have any of you ever been in a porta potty? They're gross, right? So very gross. So we just want to have a bathroom that's not only clean, but very safe for people like my friend Mike and a couple of other people that even the handicap accessible would not even would help them. And the reason I'm definitely up here for the parties. Hate them. They're very gross. I'm trying not to laugh. But just please help us out, because then I purposely do not drink a lot of water just so I don't have to use it, just so I can avoid it. So if this, of course it won't happen this year, but if next year we have it up, I can actually use the bathroom without having to the gross. Thank you for your consideration, and thank you for listening and the little chuckles here and there. And thank you.
Thank you.
Mike and Tom.
My name is Michael Gunther. I play.
His address is 23711 Florence Acres Road in Monroe.
Thank you.
My name is Michael Gunther. I play on the Miracle League. I love the Miracle League. Kids with disabilities don't get to play on team sports. But the Miracle League gave us a team to play on. I love my team. So in 2009 was the best day of my life. That's when the Miracle League field opened. I am so proud to play on that field. It was a dream come true. We need bathrooms at that field. People like me can't use the play buttons. I can't even use the handicap one. Think about it. I would have to use with the door open, because of my wheelchair. Please make a decision on to fund the bathrooms. So people like me can use it with dignity. Thank you.
Todd Johnson.
Good job, Mike. Hi there, my name is Todd Johnson. I live at 20513 113th Drive, southeast of Homish, Washington. First, I want to just real quick support Eric and the hospital levy. I'm also on that committee, and I just real quickly say the reason I'm supporting it is because it's about choice for our community, and it's about quality of life. And if you believe in providing choice for medical care and increasing the quality of life in the community, I hope you'll join me in supporting that. So keep that in mind when you're looking at those endorsements. We really appreciate all the support we can get. The main reason I'm here, though, is as a member of the Rotary Club and been involved with the Miracle Field since its inception. Obviously, I got upstaged by a couple very good speakers that can talk about what it means to Miracle League a lot more than me. But as a business owner here in Monroe, at Speedway Chevrolet, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the business case for why it makes sense. When Rotary put that field in, really, it was basically about our fundraising and about having state grants to be able to put essentially a $1 million facility right here at the foot of Monroe. And really, we're only using it for Miracle League 6 or 8 weekends out of the year, so it's very limited. So it allows for the ability for the city of Monroe to utilize this field, which is a fully turf field, so it can be used, you know, literally 365 days a year at the city. So we essentially created a park for the benefit of the city, and the city has already been able to take advantage of that with numerous. I know the varsity women's softball team at the high school uses that as their home field. There were numerous tournaments that have been held on that field throughout the year for softball and for Little League. When we designed the field, we intentionally designed it to be able to accommodate Little League as well as softball. All the dimensions work for both of those sports. So it's not just about providing something for Miracle League. While that's very important, it also is a great business case for doing something that's going to continue to attract events that are going to be held here. And I know a big part of the funding source is potentially going to come from an area where it's about what are we doing to attract economic activity to our area. And this field has already proven that really at no cost to the city, it's provided significant economic impact. And we expect that by having a bathroom facility there, it's going to do nothing but increase the ability for the city to utilize that resource to the greatest extent. In addition, there's going to be other activities going on in that area. We know the cabin piece will be developed at some point. We know that there's other plans for that. It only makes sense to have restroom facilities in that end of the park. Right now, the only restroom facilities are located over in the Sky Valley here park, which is a long ways away. And so this allows the city to provide these type of amenities, again, which just makes economic sense. So from that perspective, we appreciate your support. We've raised about $50,000 through the club itself, and you've already committed graciously in the past funding efforts, another 50, so we have $100,000 banked. And you'll hear the exact numbers from Mike, but I believe it's around $180,000 is the entire budget. So what we're asking for is if you'd be willing to fund the additional 80 tonight so that we can make this project a reality and bring our restroom facilities that these kids deserve for them, but also as a great asset for the city. So I appreciate your time and thank you for your support.
Thank you.
That's all that I have who have signed up to speak to Council this evening, but as always, I would like to open up to members of the audience who would like to address Council. I would ask that you approach the podium, provide your name and address for the record, and limit your comments to 5 minutes. The podium is open at this time. Seeing no one else, we will move on, but thank you to those who shared this evening. We appreciate your comments and input. And I would not only venture to say that it makes good economic sense, but it's just good common sense that we move in this direction. Not that I'm trying to sway the council. All right, moving on to the consent agenda. Anything to pull? And if not, a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
All All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Kerrion and seconded by Councilmember Camp to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Great. Council, given the number of individuals here tonight who would like to, I believe, are here to hear discussion as well as understand the direction the council might take with regards to the Rotary Field, I would like to ask that we move item number 2 ahead of the ordinance amending chapter MMC, 18 MMC. If there's no problem with that, we'll do that. All right. Great. Then, Mike, if you would.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor. So, as was discussed in the council meeting last week, there was not in attendance. In order to facilitate the completion of that Rotary Field project by installing the plan for a restroom, the city can use funds from the Sanitary Sewer Capital Fund in addition to the $50,000 that is in the Parks Capital Fund that's already earmarked towards that project. In order to formalize this proposal, it's necessary to amend the existing agreement between the City of Monroe and the Rotary Club of Monroe. So staff, along with attorney Zach Lell, and also in consultation, continuous communication with some Rotary members that are heading up the project, we have a second addendum to the agreement regarding the construction, maintenance, and use of the Rotary Field, which is in your packet. Really, there are three main terms, really, and I'll probably turn over to Zach if he wants to add some more to that. But first is the reaffirmation of the agreement, and then second is amending Section 3 of the agreement, which is the responsibility for funding, purchase, and installation of a public restroom facility. I'm going to run through the different parts of this quickly. So, purchase and installation of the Rotary Field public restroom facilities, you go to all necessary and associated site preparation tax, shall be governed by the provision of the section. Rotary shall remit to the city a monetary contribution in an amount not less than $55,049. And that is what Todd Johnson had mentioned earlier, the amount to date that the Rotary has raised toward this. So except for the Rotary's monetary contribution, then the city shall be responsible for funding the balance of the purchase and installation of the public restroom facility. So the next point is the purchase and installation shall be the responsibility of the city. And then the next point is the Rotary may, with city's consent through its membership, provide volunteer labor toward the site preparation. So that's allowing for if there are opportunities still through this phase, this final phase, to take advantage of some volunteerism for the project, we can consider that. And that is really it. And the effect of the addendum in that, you know, it ties it to the original agreement. So Zach, did you have any other comments you wanted to make regarding this addendum?
No, I think that Mr. Farrell covered all the main points correctly. The purpose of that first provision, the reaffirmation of the agreement in Section 1, is just to clarify that even though some of the performance deadlines in the original agreement arguably were not met because of the carryover of this restroom facility and the fact that it wasn't installed within the time frame of the original document, that the parties are agreeing that original agreement is still in full force and effect, and I believe we can do that as long as both parties are amenable to it. And apart from that, I think Mike covered all of the substantive provisions and the purpose of the document.
And then I'll wrap up my bit here, is that the restroom is the Taos model, and it's a concrete prefabricated unit from CXT. Is what we've again gone over with members of Rotary, all the details of the facility as far as what Rotary's needs and desires are for the facility, and also what the parks and the community's needs and desires are for the facility. So we have a good agreement on that. So I just want to just end with, as far as my spiel here, is that I'm really excited personally for this too. Since I've been here, I was able to work with Rotary when things were moving to complete the installation and construction of the field. So and since then, keeping in touch with Rotary members and working towards this final phase. And so I'm just really pleased that. That we're able to be at this point tonight, and I definitely want to thank Jeff Sachs for being the Columbus here and his discovery of this use of this fund. It's if not for that, I wouldn't be here tonight. So I appreciate that. So thank you, and I'll take any questions or comments.
Who's going to be first? Councilmember Cutback, come on.
Oh. ESP? Well, actually, I wanted just to state for the record that I am a member of Rotary, which is a nonprofit service organization. I'm not an employee of Rotary, so I do not receive any benefit from voting on this agreement.
I disagree. I think you'll receive a lot of benefit as well as the rest of the any other comments, questions for Mike this evening? Tonight is opportunity for council to provide staff with one of two things, really. We do have a recommendation. We're always optimistic on the city's behalf, and the recommended action is to authorize the mayor to sign the second addendum to agreement regarding construction, maintenance, and use of Rotary Field with Rotary Club of Monroe Foundation, and expressly authorize further revisions by the mayor to the extent deemed necessary or appropriate.
So moved.
Very good. Thank you.
Second.
All right. Motion's been made by Councilmember Cutback and seconded by Councilmember Hanford. Any other comments or questions? I would only like to say thank you to the Rotary as well to the members of our community who have believed in this project so dearly over the years, and it's my pleasure to also be part of bringing this to a complete fruition. Not the most pleasant subject to be talking about, but one that is certainly needed and will benefit the community at large as well as the Merit League itself. And so with that said, I will ask each and every one of you at this time, if you are in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good. The motion does pass, and we look forward to it.
Mayor, for really helping move this forward. You had a big part of it, and I know the staff and Mr. Sachs and Mr. Farrell also did, but I want to thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I know a number of you are here for this very item,
yes.
And so I would imagine that you might want to sneak out. So what we're going to do is take a 5-minute recess, allow for you to do that.
You're already cake.
I didn't even see that. Is that a Marnie Smith special?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's, did you read what it said?
I can't see it from this side.
Okay.
I'm blind. Yes.
You have to get a picture taken with it.
Yes. Oh, that's terrible.
I know. Bribery. You have to hold it so somebody can take a picture. Yeah, I want you to hold it.
Now back in session. Yeah. Just pause there for the door to be closed while people enjoy the wonderful shape. Celebrating the decision that you just made. Thank you again, Council. All right, we'll then Now it's time to move on to a new business item, ordinance amending Chapter 18 of the MMC Zoning Code. This is anticipated to be a first reading, and Mr. Sachs.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. Tonight we're having the first reading of new ordinance amending our sign code. We reviewed this with you last week. I think it was last week. It all kind of merges together. The cover sheet we have been through, the recommended action at this time is a motion to accept the first reading of Ordinance 02-2013 regarding Zoning Code Amendment ZCA 12-2012-04 amending MMC Title 1880 signs as proposed in Exhibit 1 and based on the findings and conclusions in Exhibit 2. I did want to bring to your attention a revised ordinance that's in front of you. There's a redlined version. We have discussed a couple of things over time, one of which is we'd like to be able to interact with this code as time goes along, see what mistakes we may have made, correct any mistakes. And on the first side of the ordinance, you'll see that the solution to that is to make this an interim ordinance. That allows us, it's not unlike, I guess, an emergency ordinance.
Very similar concept. I think the council's aware from previous moratoria and other interim measures that you adopted on a temporary basis. State law does allow the council to enact temporary or interim regulations. They don't have to be framed as an emergency, but they can be. I don't know that it necessarily needs to happen in this context. I think the operative issue is that if the council approves the revised proposal, the regulations in front of you will be effective for a six-month period while the Planning Commission formulates a permanent set of regulations, and unless the interim ordinance is formally extended by a subsequent council vote, they will sunset automatically at the end of that 6 months.
So, with that portion addressed, we'll be coming back and take a look. The Planning Commission will take a look at this again by August 20th. And on the back, if you take a look at Section 3, if I can bring your memories back to our comp plan amendment from last fall, when we amended the North Kelsey guidelines. At that time, we were going to eliminate Chapter 7 of North Kelsey Guidelines that pertains to signs and lighting. And both the Planning Commission and the Council felt as though leaving those in place as a security blanket until the new sign ordinance was fully mature and ready to go was good business to prohibit, you know, some ungangly sign getting vested in the meantime. What this section does is allows us to go back and strut that out of the code, repeal it from our books, and clean up any other issues that we may have in our code. Section 4 authorizes the clerk to schedule a public hearing on the interim regulations, so we will schedule that out in time once we've had a chance to use the code a little bit, feel it out, see where we're going with that. And this is good for 6 months. And then council, if we feel as though we're not quite ready to put the formal stamp on it, we can extend it again. So with that, I would entertain any questions you may have to the specifics of the code. Again, forgive me for being the messenger tonight, but Paul is out of town on family leave. And while I've sat through all the hearings, I'm definitely not 100% expert on it, but I'll sure give it a try. So, open to any questions or action from the council.
Councilmember Keller.
Thank you. Jeff, I have probably about six or seven questions, so hopefully they came up after last week as I was delving through things a little bit more. On the sign allowance table, where does it list the kind of the video dynamic signs? What are those? I see the changeable message, but is that the video or is that just the letters? Or
okay,
is it both?
So changeable message, if you go into the ordinance itself, and let me find the
for
area.
The definition?
Not the definition, but they're in the area. Let me find it.
Do you have that screen too?
electronic signs, there's four different types of electronic signs, and they're all contained in this.
Are you talking about the digital signage?
Digital signage. But basically, changeable message signs are where all the different types of digital or electronic signs take place. Now, digital itself is implicit in the code. There is no, any sign can be digital. That sign right there could be a digital sign. So the electronic portion of it, or changeable message portion of it, talks about what happens to that digital sign and how it's used or from an advertising perspective.
Okay, so in the sign allowance table where it says changeable message, where it says where those are allowed and kind of, you know, the size and all that, is that also means a video display or a...
Correct.
Okay.
And depending on the zoning, for instance, in the downtown, historic downtown core, the only changeable message sign is time attack.
Okay.
We've dialed it back that far. In the MUNC, multi-use, mixed-use neighborhood commercial zone, we allow for changeable message signs, but typically they're just going to be your red letter, non-repeating, city council tonight type sign. As you move into the Monroe, or the mixed-use commercial zone, they're slightly more permissive use.
Okay.
And then once you get out into the general commercial and the light industrial, then the full meal deal is allowed.
Okay.
Digital, video, within the constraints of the code.
Right, with their height and all. So when you say general commercial, do you also mean on kind of West Main? Is West Main general commercial, so a full video can be allowed there?
West Main, well, depending on where on West Main.
Right, but somewhere on West Main, there is general commercial, so could the...
Well, we have service commercial,
right,
and we also have mixed-use commercial.
Okay.
I don't believe there's any general commercial on West Main. So the service commercial and general commercial are almost identical. In fact, if you look at the code, I think they're hand in glove all the way through. In the gray bar, in the sign allowance table, if you look at page 28 of the ordinance, I guess that's agenda item NB 1.5, permanent signs, general and service commercial zones. So typically the general commercial and the service commercial match each other identically. And the service commercial on West Main is kind of the immediate area around 522.
So the video full signage for video display are allowed there?
Yes.
Okay, so that's on West Main. Last week we talked about height, and I believe the consultant said that I asked what was the average, and he said 35 feet was the average of the sign height. And looking at other data and other things that I've read, I didn't see that 35 feet was considered the average of sign height. I saw where they had a table, and it has to do with the speed and the setback and kind of, you know, a couple other, it's a scientific formula of what's the best height that you should have. And on Highway 2, 35 miles per hour is different than 55 miles per hour. And what I had read was a 55 mile an hour, 35 feet is the average. But when you're going 35 miles an hour, 25 feet is the average. So I guess... Can you explain a little bit more about the height?
Well, when Tom was talking about the average, he wasn't talking about an industry average. He was talking about municipality average. He's typical to code that is written. 35-mile-an-hour roads, though if it was 30, I don't remember what he said, but 30 or 35 feet. So that, I think that's where he was giving his average.
industry standard. There are standards, I believe, out there that, and I'm not an expert on it.
Sure.
Depending on the speed, height, and size of the sign are important. One of the conversations that we've had is, I don't know if you've noticed, between Snohomish's two exits, Snohomish Station has put up a new sign out there.
I haven't seen it.
And that's your classic off-premises sign that everybody has resisted in Monroe. But when you look at that sign and you try to read the instructions at the bottom,
yes,
you're going 55, you can't read them.
Sure.
So, you know, that's a very clear example of signage that probably was undersized. Now, there are standards that allow you to bring it up.
Sure.
And again, we've had extensive conversations with the Planning Commission about heights and sign heights. Well, there's two areas. The Highway 2 general commercial discussion was, is 35 feet the right maximum height? And in the service commercial on 522
right
facing,
main, yeah.
Is it? Well, it's on a Main Street. You can't put a Main Street facing sign at 45 feet. You can't put a 522 sign at 45 feet.
But you'll see it from Main Street.
You could, absolutely. So those were the two areas, and the Planning Commission felt that those were appropriate.
Okay. I was reading a little bit more on the Scenic Vista Act and kind of the Greenway and how that relates to Highway 2. And so we briefly touched on that last week, but we didn't go into detail of how that really impacts the sign code as proposed. And is there any more information on that? Or what if the sign code is in conflict with that document?
Well, the danger in embedding any state or federal law into your local code is they can change it and you don't know about it. The Scenic Vista Act, as far as Monroe is impacted, it's basically Highway 2 from Woods Creek East. The only property that's going to impact right now would be if, and I'll use the East Monroe property because we're all familiar with East Monroe. It's not zoned commercial right now. So it would be impacted by this if somebody was to build a church, which is permitted out there right now. Their sign would have to comply with the Scenic Vista Act. However, if that property was commercial, it would have zero impact because it would then be considered a Type 3 sign under the law. And Type 3 signs are any sign that is in a commercial or industrial zones. So, and those are only allowed within municipalities. So our code would prevail in any circumstance where there's a commercial or an industrial zoning designation. So that's the only place in town it would impact our code unless state law changes. And typically, I would think that the state would do an adequate job of notifying any municipalities within the jurisdiction of that their law.
Okay.
Did I get that pretty good, Brad? Three of us kind of tackled that one, so.
On some of the sizes of the sign, I guess, kind of the square footage of the sign itself, we're going from 100 to 150. That's correct in some of this. What is it? Is it currently, I'm sorry, I don't have the existing one right in front of me. Is it currently 100 and we're going to 150?
Well, it depends on the location of the sign, the zone.
Sure.
But we're going from 100 in some areas to 150 in some areas.
Can you give me an example on a Main Street, or not a Main Street, but somewhere in our community now of a sign that's 100? I'm trying, because I drove through town and I was looking at all the signs. I drove on Highway 2 this weekend. Just trying to visualize what 100 looks like and 150.
I honestly haven't gone through that drill myself.
Okay.
As to what is 100 and what is 150.
Okay. So like the AutoZone sign, I know that's
the AutoZone sign is probably
high.
10 by 5, perhaps, so it's probably 50 square feet.
Okay.
At the very, you know, way up there.
Okay.
No, I'm guessing if that's the correct. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Next question, are we giving any incentive? You know, we talked about the design standards and how they were standards and guidelines and how we would try to encourage businesses to adhere to them, but as long as the sign met the legal definition or what we had put in there,
they get to kind of choose their sign. Some places give incentives for business owners to have better signs or encourage them, or have we thought of anything like that, or is there anything? I didn't see anything in the code about that.
We quite honestly stepped away from incentives.
Okay.
We stepped away from aesthetics. We tried to keep the code to the code. And the idea with the guidelines being is show people what we feel good signage is, and encourage them to use the good signage and work with them. And I think a city of our size, our planning department is 5 people, and interacting with the applicant is not a hard thing to do at this stage. So working with them during their permit application, I think that interaction is important.
So
no incentives.
Okay, so did the Planning Commission discuss incentives and just decided not to, or that wasn't even brought to the table?
They didn't even.
And did the Planning Commission discuss anything about purchasing or any discussion about the city itself doing wayfinding signs as part of this sign code? You know, taking some of the burden off, or also working in conjunction with business to offer wayfinding, and then there might be less clutter or less signage needed because the city has done some public signage that can be helpful to business.
That we touched on wayfinding, but in talking with Tom Beck, with our consultant, and I think our planning and public works department, they're two distinctly different items. Wayfinding signs are more of a public works type sign. Even though there is a look and form and feel to them, they really don't fit into the sign code. And about the only place wayfinding comes into the sign code is in the circumstance where the off-site monument signs that allow for a business that it is adjacent to an arterial but maybe one lot off, is to allow them to direct in a very small, concise way their customers off the arterial onto the side street to get to the That's the only wayfinding really that we have. The other one would be the treatment for monument off-site, off-premises signs on Highway 2 that allow for the larger businesses to get together, purchase a piece of property, and put up a sign. The trade-off that the Planning Commission came up with is any off-premises signage, that square footage is deducted from their on-site allocation. So that was the only way we felt it could be fair to any other business owner that doesn't have that ability to do off-site signage.
And when the Planning Commission discussed the ordinance, did you guys have any discussion about the gateway concept that you had brought up probably a year ago, and talking about what the gateways would look like and how the sign code factors into that? Because when I read the sign code, and we can have a 45-foot sign on West Main facing 522, and that is considered a gateway right there off 522 into our community, and then obviously 203 and Highway 2 at kind of, you're talking coming from East Woods Creek, somewhere in there. I don't see kind of the concept of the gateway brought out in this sign code.
And they're not. And that is part of the wayfinding program.
Sure.
In my budget this year, there was $20,000 to start that wayfinding process. We haven't done the RFP yet to start that process. Arlington just went through it. So that process will help define what we want to do in town, what it's going to feel like, what do we need people to get to. And I think the gateway signage, if you will, entry into the four points of the town will be part of that process. But no, it's not considered a sign, if you will, in our sign code.
Yes, and I don't know if it needs to be considered a sign, but having the discussion at the same time as we're changing the sign code, I think would be beneficial, just because to put it all in a comprehensive package to know what we want it to look like, because even though this could be an interim ordinance of 6 months, once we put up a 45-foot sign at a gateway into our community, even though it's interim, by this code it says they've got 10 years, even if it becomes non-conforming, to be up there before it's changed again. So while I appreciate the thought that we're going to come back in 6 months, I like that idea. Things that have changed within the 6 months, you know, might become a non-conforming sign after, if we do change it after the 6 months, but that's going to impact our community for 10 years down the road based on the 6 months in interim. So those are my questions now. I have comments, but I'll give up the floor.
Councilor here.
Thank you. First, I'd like to say thanks to all the people that have worked in this planning commission. It's done a ton of work. Really appreciate that. Your role with that, and Paul, I had talked about it a little bit last week. Still really excited about having chamber members. I think you mentioned that last week, kind of having the chamber members, you know, like a better standard. I think that's a really that's a great goal. And those all come under the guidelines things that you're talking about, rather than.
It could come under the guidelines, or it could come under a totally separate program that the chamber decides to implement.
Yes. Very excited about that. Business involvement with this, and then it sounds like Tom Becker, certainly my limited interaction with him, that sounds like he's been invaluable in providing really, you know, some best practices and what really makes sense for the significant number of changes that need to happen.
It was awesome, particularly with the formatting. Once he presented the tabular format to us and reduced footnotes, reduced text, it made sense to us, and then it was really an easy process of what's missing and what do we need to add.
I like what I see so far. It's the first reading tonight, so I'm going to go ahead and move to accept as first reading ordinance number 02-2013 regarding the zoning code amendment ZCA 2012-04 as amended, amending MMC Title 18-80 signs as proposed in Exhibit 1 and based on the findings and conclusions as shown in Exhibit 2. I'd be looking for a second for that first reading. Okay, then.
Awesome. Councilmember Camp, okay. For motions be made by Councilmember Green to accept as a first reading ordinance 002-2013 regarding the zoning code amendment ZCA 2012-04 as amended, amending MMC Title 1880 signs as proposed in Exhibit 1 based on the findings and conclusions shown in Exhibit 2. Second, did I say who seconded? Councilor
Davis.
Davis. Councilor Davis. I'll leave your voice. So. Okay. Councilor Kedemeyer.
Thank you. So, Jeff, just a couple of comments. I too liked certain things about this code, and I do appreciate people's work on this. I know it was a year-long process, and it's a complex issue, and it's a complex document, and just going through all this took a lot of time and effort. So, and I've talked to some business owners who had said there's a lot of things that are better, so I appreciate that. A couple things, love the table, how it's put in the table format and the sign allowance. I think that makes it easier to look at, even though it's a difficult thing to even look at, but it does make it easier. Couple things in the ordinance I really like is when a business closes, the on-site sign needs to be taken down within a reasonable amount of time. That's going to help with the look and feel of the community. The downtown area, the worst thing you want is the signs that have been up there on the closed business for two years. It really, I think, negates the progress we want to make in an area. The other pieces I like is the guidance on the clear guidance on the temporary signs, the sandwich signs. That makes a lot of sense. On limited duration signs, it's clearer. There's more information in this sign code than in the other one. I also like the looking at the fees every year and putting it in resolution. I think that makes sense. And then what we talked a little bit briefly last week with the consultant about the murals and just, there might be a possibility, I think, of getting the Arts Council involved and maybe kind of looking at something like that. He had mentioned some cities do that, so that could hopefully be a possibility. And as I mentioned, I like that it gets sent back to the Planning Commission But I look at, there still can be some things that are in, put in place now that are going to have a lasting effect. Some of the concerns I have with this, I really do have a concern with the height of signs on Highway 2 and 522 Main Street. Main Street, most of the sign height is 10 feet from what I could read from this. I could be mistaken, but it looks like most of it is 10 feet. But then when you get to West Main, I understand facing 522, but I consider that a gateway. We could have a pole sign at 45 feet high. And a pole sign, you saw the images that they showed last week, which was great that we had those images. Pole signs are not favored. Even the consultant said that. But then at a gateway, we could have a 45-foot pole sign right there. So I do have concerns about that. I drove up and down the streets this weekend looking for the pluses and negatives, and I really think on Highway 2, 35 feet is too high. The auto zone is 30 feet. If you look at the Denny's sign, as I looked down the street, I could see the Burger King sign. I could see signs, and those are under 30 feet and under currently right now. I have some issues with the pole signs. Everything, I brought this up last week, especially the really high ones. They are not encouraged, and they certainly do have a look and feel to a community to have a pole sign. I think on Highway, on Main Street and 203 and east of Highway 2 and at the entrance, if possible, to have monument signs, they look better. They say a lot better about our community coming into the community rather than pole signs. I have some concern about the digital signs. I've talked to a couple people in the community about that. And once we allow digital signs that have the unlimited what's allowed, you can't control the content on some of those signs. And I know there's some legal issues about, you know, some of the content that can appear on some of the signs. Not absolutely set in stone or documented. There's conflicting research about safety about the digital signs, and you know there's some arguments that if they're unsafe, there's some that they provide a lot of clutter. I haven't seen enough information for me to make a definitive answer on that, but I have concerns about that, and concerns about is this really the vision for our community that we want to go? And then I mentioned this earlier, but the sign code with our gateway concept, you know, I'm concerned about that because I really thought that the gateway concept could be a great idea for this community. And I think the sign code, the way it's looked at right now, actually hinders a possible gateway concept. And then I didn't see anything in the code that talked about encouraging businesses that share parking to just have one sign. That limits the clutter of signs. So if you have a business on Highway 2 that has joint parking, if you have one sign that's a multi-tenant sign, but that is their sign, that can help with the clutter. I was concerned about the downtown Rails and Roads neighborhood, which I think has a lot of potential. And it, you know, things that I've read, they talk about neighborhood commercial, which that area is kind of, you know, it's different there. It's not like Highway 2. It's not quite Main Street. There's residential, there's business. But that area should have a little bit less intense signage than a highway commercial, and I didn't notice that it was different. So those are some of the concerns I have on this. This is a very complex document. We just received it last week. I will not be voting in favor of it tonight because, again, it took me quite a while just to go through this and try to do some research and look for additional data. So those are my concerns, and I won't be voting yes on it tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hamill.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for everything that's said. We appreciate all your efforts and work. I'm good with everything, but Councilmember Kovac does bring up a good point about the gateway concept, and it was something that I frankly hadn't even thought about until it was brought up tonight, how that would affect that. And so I would love to know, I would love to have some kind of dialogue, and maybe you know, Paul's not here, so it's kind of hard, but regarding how that would affect the gateway idea, because I'm all for the gateway concept myself, but I definitely would hate to say, yeah, this looks great, let's pass it, and then in the next few months, our gateway gets a 45-foot sign. So
just to throw some balance out, our gateway right now is two very large car lots. Pure and simple. They're not going anywhere. They have a business interest in advertising. The state highway has increased its elevation. The surrounding area has, and what we're trying to do is avail them with the options of advertising to their maximum potential. Now, back to the gateway. The gateway is the roundabout at that end of town. And when you're coming east into town, that is what you're looking at when you either coming under the bridge or coming off the off-ramps of the roundabouts.
Can I just back up for a second?
You bet.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean 522. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Highway 2, oh, 203.
You bet.
I understand the cars and 522. That's that's already there. My concern is the others.
And 45 feet will not take place anywhere else. The only place that would be allowed would be at the intersection of 522 in the service commercial zone, basically two car lots. It's dialed down that tight. The rest of the town, 35 feet is the maximum height throughout.
But I understand that, but there again, we could have 35-foot signs at the front of, I'm thinking of driving on Highway 2 from Everett. Mm-hmm. And come around that corner.
You bet.
And before we get our gateway idea established, there could be these 35-foot signs.
And so, just a little point counterpoint. Number one, if we go with the gateway approach first, determine what our monuments are going to look like coming into town, then do like Washington, D.C., and say nothing's going to be higher than the Washington Monument, then the rest of the town will have to comply with that. We can't allow for we can't go and say, well, these six legally licensed commercial plot or parcels that just happen to be next to the gateway can only have signs 10 feet tall. Because then we're starting to discriminate against the same types of parcels. So we really have to keep the code consistent throughout the zones, and again, it is a policy decision. If you want to stop the process, leave the code the way it is. And I was just looking at the existing table. 35 feet is the standard right now for Highway 2. That's what we've had since the last time this was done. So we would be living off the existing code, whatever comes in, until we were able to go through that treatment. And do the gateway process. That said, again, that's not a quick process. The sign code, for me, being an engineer and the type of guy that I am, having the intense conversations and the input from multiple different parties was excruciating. The gateway, or the wayfinding process, and that gateway thing is going to bring in a whole lot of different types of opinions, and it's going to get very aesthetic in nature in the discussion about how that's going to look. And I can see that process taking longer than this process did.
Sure.
So I understand the concern. It's always the cart and the horse. It's worth considering.
Brad has a comment. I have a question for Brad.
Just one comment on that is that when we brought you the work program for the Planning Commission, we did put off, because of lack of staff, the gateway program project, whatever you want to call it, till the 2015 Comprehensive Plan Amendment. So that's a fairly long way out.
That helps.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Just for visual effect, if you would, Brad, How tall is the Jack in the Box sign on Highway 2?
Tall sign. Which one?
The right one is not
really west on Route 2.
I have no idea.
It's also up on top of the hill.
Yeah. You jumped ahead.
I don't think it's over 25 feet tall.
Off the ground?
Off the ground.
How high is it off of Highway 2?
50 feet, 60 feet. Because that pad is elevated quite a bit. Mm-hmm.
Just for
the one monument that I actually know is the top of the flagpole at Raritan Dodge is 35 feet tall, and that's the one that we know it's 35 feet tall. So that flag when it's flapping is I don't think there's the new Safeway sign. It was 28 feet, I think.
I think it's 25.
Yeah. Feet. And quite honestly, the sign industry is going, at least now, the genre is the Denny sign. Nice, tight. They have an image, they can project it, and they don't need to have a gigantic sign in order to project who they are. And that's what we're going to encourage through the guidelines. But then again, there's nothing to prohibit somebody to put one that, 34.12 inches. They can go 35 feet.
Councilmember Cam.
Thank you. That's what I want to clarify. So is it only 522 in Westfield that can have a 35%?
45.
45.
45.
Which is 10 feet higher than any place else you can.
That's correct.
And you just told me that the flag at Raritan Dodge is 35 feet tall.
That's correct.
An additional 10 feet above that?
Yes.
Only there?
Only
right next to a residential area. That's my first point. And the second one, Councilmember Kovac mentioned non-conforming signs being with us for 10 years in the event of something changing. So, and can you speak to that?
Tom has represented to us, Tom Beck with our consultant, that that's the industry standard. It's just a way that it gives that business the time to write off the expense of buying that advertising. And I don't know if we can go less than that. That would be a question that we would have to research, and what's legal, what's not legal, what's the norm, and what are the types of things that are going to chase people out of town. There's going to be non-conforming signs right now from good businesses,
right.
And so that's the balance that you have to look at. Now, not to say that we can't go out and encourage that person to change their sign. Help them with a business case to do that.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Moon.
Thank you, Mayor. Jeff, the reason for the 45-foot signs, is that because the road's so much taller, so much higher? Is that
it's higher and it's faster. It's the one place where we have 55-mile-an-hour traffic through town. It's also meets the needs of that particular industry. In that case, service commercial, we have two car lots there. When 522, the grade elevation on the southbound side, the new lanes are actually higher than the other lanes. And then the site distance to, if we're looking at Speedway Chevrolet from the west side, southbound lanes, the site distance, your site triangle has changed now.
And what is it currently there? Is it 35, you said?
35 feet.
Okay. I talked to the former owner of the Kawasaki dealer that's right there on the corner. It's now, I think, now out of business. And that was his complaint a couple years ago when I was out doorbelling and talking to people. Was his sign is so low because his property sits down and nobody can see his sign. So I understand the comment that you made, Councilmember Cuddeback, I think in that area that makes sense. You said the 35-foot height is what we currently have right now anyways.
Correct.
So this isn't changing. Leaving it at that doesn't change any of that. My only question would be, for the purpose of the gateway concept, before we bring this back next week for the final reading, can we look and see what the options are for reducing the 10 years down to something else, say 5 years? Like you said, I don't see somebody going out and putting up a sign tomorrow. But again, if it's a sign that we're stuck with it for 10 years, and So if we're going to be talking about the gateway concept, it would make sense that if we could lighten that, I'd feel a little bit better about it. This to me is like asking five kids where they want to have dinner. You're going to get five different answers, and everyone's going to be passionate about it. I have no desire to be in the throes of this thing like you guys have had to be. So I understand some of the bad that's there, are things that people don't like. A lot of that is just a matter of taste. And in general, to me, this looks much better than what we have today. And you know, again, like I said, this is like opening a can of worms every time we touch it. So, to me, the good far outweighs the bad. That would be my only concern, is the 5-year, lowering that 10-year, with the idea that we're talking about a gateway concept fairly soon.
And as if I could, perhaps that's a decision we could put off until the public hearing in 6 months, 5 years, 10 years. It's still going to be well outside that six-month window.
And I'd be fine with that, because I don't see anybody between now and the public hearing putting up a non-conforming sign. Mm-hmm. You know, it's possible, probably not.
Very good. Thank you.
I think it's one of the pieces of information that might help council understand the impact of reducing that 10-year to 5-year would be how long does it take a business to recoup or recover the expense for that, for a sign. And in addition, I think that they're not just recouping the cost, but the business is in business to make a profit. You know, some profit margin should be expected, we would hope that a business would be able to recoup some profit as well from the business that the sign might bring during that period. So, if I may, for staff's purposes, one of the questions that Councilmember Cutaback had raised, or comments that you had raised, was with regards to incentives. Is it possible, and you said others were doing it, I'm not sure if you meant other cities were doing it or what. Incentives, would that be something reducing the application fee or I'm just kind of throwing some out there. And again, that's something that we can, if not in the next week, in the next 6 months, look at in terms of some type of incentive. I think that, if the city can provide some assistance in a reduced application fee in order to get a better looking sign, whatever that is, I don't know. Again, that's a matter of taste. We could move forward. Is that what you were saying, Councilmember? Okay, just so we understand and staff understands as well, moving down the line. So, all right, Councilmember Williams.
Yeah, one more comment. If this is only interim, it may be helpful to bring some of those things that you have in writing and present those so we can debate them within the next 6 months. I still think changing this now is much better than waiting, leaving the whole thing unchanged for 6 months. A lot of the concerns you brought up were valid. It'd be nice to get them, to have the just time to discuss them.
All right, we do have a motion on the floor. At this time, seeing no lights, hearing no other comments, we'll take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passed. 5-1 council. Thank you, Jeff. Okay. Excuse me. Paper. All right. A couple of weeks ago, there was some discussion on behalf of council with regards to the Redflex camera contract, and Councilor Gearing had proposed or desired some dialogue, and so I'm going to turn this now to Councilor Gearing.
Good, thank you. As we discussed again last week, the desire to
bring, have a little bit of discussion, and then be able to have some action as well, at least some potential action, and we move the potential action part to this week, which is where we are tonight, without rehashing everything that we had said last week. This is the next logical step in the process, given that we've heard twice now, overwhelmingly from our constituents in the largest type of public hearing possible, that it's time for this, at the end of the current term, for this agreement to terminate, which is the point of this this evening, is to offer as the mayor to send them a letter, letting them know that's our intent to do that when the term is up at the end of the year, which is the recommended action. Again, we've worked through the process. We've, quite frankly, been vindicated through the appeal process, and it's time to, quite frankly, just move on into the next chapter. I do appreciate their differing opinions on that, and I certainly appreciate those. Ultimately, we're here to listen to what the people elected us for, and that's it. That's to represent them, and they have clearly said 7 out of 10 who voted, let's put an end to it. So, to that end, I move that the City Council offer as the mayor to notify Redflex Traffic Systems Incorporated by letter that the city does not intend to renew the September 12, 2007 agreement for the red light enforcement program beyond the initial term, and that the city instead intends to allow the agreement to terminate upon the conclusion of said term.
Second.
Okay, motion's been made by Councilmember Gearing. Second by Councilmember Hanford. Motion reads that the City Council authorize the mayor to notify Redflex Traffic Systems, Inc. by letter that the city does not intend to renew the September 12, 2007 agreement for voter red light enforcement program beyond the initial term, and that the city instead intends to allow the agreement to terminate upon the conclusion of said term. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. I was asked again this week by someone what we're going to do, and I am so ready to go public with our agreement with our constituents, and that we're going to listen to them. We care about what they say, and it matters, and we're not going to go against the majority. I don't know what else to say, but I'd like to put this to rest.
Okay, thank you, Councilmember Cam.
Thank you. I want to put together this document about the red light issue. Thank you. It's very important. I really appreciate it. As we said before, there was an election in 2012, and 70% of the voters voted to terminate the contract when it was complete. From the documentation I've got here, two of the three letters, and Brad, there's no date on the one that presented, were written before November 2012, and were available through 2012, well before the election. And at the last page, they also talk about media coverage, with the exception of one date that I can see. Everything else was, again, available before the election date. So there was considerable coverage before the general election. The electorate and the opposing sides had sufficient resources and information to make an informed decision based on just this document. Again, with all this information, the voters still voted 70% in favor of terminating the contract, well, termination at the end of the contract. I think this is a good indication of the people's will. I believe it's what we should follow as a council. And all I see in this resolution is a statement to that effect. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate your comments, Councilmember McCown. I'm more cynical. To me, this looks more like a re-election ploy to me. Timing seems a bit suspect. I appreciate saying that we're here to represent the people, but I've heard the same people that said that we're here to represent the people say that the people were lied to about what the original initiative was for, and I think had it been more clear, I think we would have gotten a different answer. I think if the question was asked if they support cameras in school zones versus red lights, we'd probably get a much different answer. I'd like to hear more from the police and more from the schools about how they feel about the effectiveness of the cameras. I am not sure what the rush to do this without hearing from those groups doesn't make any sense to me at all. I do believe we are here to represent the people, and that means that we have more information usually than the average person does. I believe if you put a vote out that said, do you think everybody that works for the government should take a 50% pay cut? You'd have 70% of the people vote in favor of it. That doesn't mean it's either legal or that it's even practical. So I appreciate hearing those comments. I just think that the information given was not correct. I think you had an attention hound and a drama queen that came in and made a lot of hay about this, that neither of them live in our city. This has been discussed now, I believe, 3 meetings in a row. And to my knowledge, none of them have been here talking in support of it. It's kind of an issue that has really died down in the media, kind of left town about this issue. So I have no vested interest one way or another with the cameras. I would much rather have a thoughtful dialogue and discuss the pros and cons before we do something like this. That, again, I don't see any benefit of doing this right now. We're not tied on the time frame to do it today as opposed to 3 months from now. So I'd like to hear more from the people who are invested and have more information. We have information now that we didn't have before. And when you look at the numbers on the school tickets, 5,000 in school zones, that frankly worries me. I think that's crazy, especially on Franklin Boulevard, where it's a street that people commonly do 45, 50 miles an hour right next to a school. So I'm not against canceling the contract. I just am against just doing it without really discussing the merits of what we really want to do. It just seems rushed to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Ketta.
Thank you. I agree with much of what Councilman Williams has stated. I, too, have no vested interest in keeping the contract going. I don't believe this information that we received tonight has been shared widely. I don't believe it's common knowledge that 5,271 tickets were in the school zone in just 2012, or that 2,064 were in the red light area. I don't believe that the public has seen this, and whether it would change their vote or not, I don't know. I do believe that we need to pay attention that 70% of the voters didn't want this. I believe that's an important piece of information. But I don't know if they made their vote based on the hoopla that was going on or based on data. The thing about us being representatives of our community is we have access to this data. We've gotten this data. We can look at it, take our time over it. There's no pressing, urgent need to do this tonight. Listen to the school groups, hear maybe more from the police if that's what council wants, but a couple members in our community mentioning what we're doing, I think it's a fair response to say we're looking at the data. We listen to what people say. There's no urgent need. The contract is still in place to put a resolution together right now at this timing. I agree with Councilman Williams. I don't know what the rush or the issue is. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Hanker.
Yeah. Is there a way, I don't know how, procedural wise, I would love for this action item to not only state what it says there, but to say something to the fact that, to make it clear that by listening to your point, by listening to you, the voters, we are following what you voted for. I mean, is there a way to clarify that? Or because really, This all looks good in my mind, except it doesn't address the point you brought up, which is we are doing this in response to you, the voters.
Can you yield for a comment?
Sure.
Yeah, that's just inherent in what we're doing, and making that public statement is the appropriate way to do that. When someone asks, you say, yeah, because we did listen. And that's why, to be
me, that's a more appropriate way to address what you're talking about. As it's written here, it's very clear what we're talking about. The other reasons for doing it are those are what you then communicate to the folks that are asking, in my opinion. And thank you for yielding to me.
Sure.
Councilmember Davis.
I agree with the information. I think a lot of the information to get out. I can use myself as a case in point. When I first saw the cameras, I had a visceral reaction to it. Didn't like them. I have more knowledge about it. I'm more comfortable with them. I don't have that reaction. I can see the wisdom in it. But we still have that perception out there, public perception. They still don't have that information. I'm thinking it may not be the time right now to continue this. So if it boils down to this, as I'm looking at it, is there really a possibility that we would extend the contracts? If there is, then let's not send that letter. But if there's not, let's just send it. Let's do it now. And put it behind us and work on other things. Move forward. And if the time is right later on to bring cameras back, I think that's a valid topic to discuss and probably do a little more educating the community stuff. That's my...
Thank you, Councilmember Lee.
Yeah, when is the contract, I believe, is up in September or October, is that correct?
Council, the agreement specifies an initial term that technically continues up to a period of 3 years after the installation date, which the contract specifically defines. And I would have to defer to the chief as to when the actual equipment was installed. The contract defines the installation date of the date on which Redflex completes the construction and installation of at least one intersection enforcement site in accordance with the terms of the agreement, so that such enforcement site is operational and functioning. And it's a fact question as to when that actually occurred.
December 31st, 2010.
So it would be December 31st, 2013?
Okay. Correct, 3 years after the installation.
How much notice do we need to give them on this?
I don't believe that there is a requirement for notice, Council. My understanding is that the agreement will expire by operation of law unless the city exercises its right to renew the agreement for an additional extension term. My understanding of the Council's action or the proposal before it tonight is to make a public affirmation of the city's intent not to renew. I don't believe this is a legally required step. This is a policy decision that the council is making.
Yeah, so again, to reiterate my point and to answer Councilman Davis, if we don't want to renew, that's fine. But we're not, this does nothing, in my mind, this does nothing different than if we make this affirmation, you know, in October or November. If we're going to use the public's opinion on it, then I think it's only fair we hear from the public on it now that there is data. There wasn't data before. There was a lot of hoopla, a lot of emotion about something. And so, the timing to me seems suspect. I don't understand what benefit we get from doing this today. And like I said, if we're going to say that it's because of what the people said they want to do, I'd like to hear from the people, that being the people that are crossing guards at the schools. That's the schools are my main concern. The other one is if you sit in front of North Kelsey, the light there at North Kelsey, and I'm at that intersection all the time, I can't imagine if we started pulling cars over what that would do to traffic on Highway 2. Yet I see that light going off all the time for people blatantly disregarding the law. So again, to my knowledge, we've had none of the camera proponents in here asking us to do this. We've had no citizens asking us to do this. I haven't received any emails on cameras in probably 6 or 7 months, so I don't see what the pressing issue is to do it without having some discussion on it first. That doing it a couple meetings from now, after we've had time to hear from people and present pros and cons,
doesn't seem like that hurts the process. Doing it today basically says we're going to ignore all that information that might be out there, and we're just going to rush to do this, and I just don't see the benefit.
Councilmember Geary?
I'd like to call for the question.
The question has been called for. Robert's rules of order, the motion will now be voted on. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
The motion passes 4-2. Councilmember Geary?
I was just going to add, I really enjoy when Councilman Davis speaks. He's got a sensible voice, so I appreciate your comments on that.
Good, Kurt.
As do I.
Okay, moving on to final action. First off is a resolution adopting utility bill, utility billing policies. And Diane?
We discussed these policies back in March, and back in March, last month.
Feels like ages ago.
Yeah, and the difference in what you see is the in, on the sheet that lists the policies, there's an introductory paragraph that our signature is crafted that just covers all our bases in case someone decides to challenge the policies. It says that the code and the state laws prevail over the policies, just so no one will guess if they are someone's lying. And also on the paragraph regarding liens, the second sentence was crafted so that by our attorney, just so it sounds, it says that we're entitled to do whatever the law allows rather than saying this is what we're going to do. So that way it covers all our bases. So it's just a little more finesse than what I originally presented to you. And but other than that, it's substantively the same as we discussed earlier.
Councilmember Keene.
Thank you. I move to approve resolution 2013/07 adopting utility billing policy.
Second. Motion has been made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Geary to approve the resolution. Williams, my bad. Seconded. The seconder was Councilmember Williams. To approve resolution 2013/007 adopting utility billing policies, I'll have the city attorney read the official resolution title.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Resolution number 2013-007, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Monroe, Washington, adopting utility billing procedural policies.
Any other questions, comments? I see no lights. All right, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion passed. Hey, Diane, I think you're next. No. This is not Diane.
That's everybody.
Yes, everybody. Resolution amending fees. Since you're on the first listed there, Diane, I'll have you.
These are the late fees, the utility billing fees that were discussed back in March. And there's been no change. I'd like to make them effective, separate from the other fees that are in the resolution. There is a sentence that says that the utility fee changes would take effect July 1st in order to give us 2 months to send mailings out to people and get on the website and get the word out so that everyone is aware of the changes that are going to take place.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to adopt resolution 2013/08, amending the 2013 fee schedule, establishing fees, fines, penalties, interest, and charges.
Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Hanford and seconded by Councilmember Cutaback to approve or to adopt resolution 2013-008, amending the 2013 fee schedule, establishing fees, fines, penalties, interest, and charges. And again, I'll have the city attorney read the official resolution title.
Resolution number 2013-008, a resolution of the Monroe City Council to amend resolutions 2012-032, establishing fees, fines, penalties, and interest and charges for 2013.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing no lights, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good. Okay, Council, your opportunity to report anything that you feel is important. Councilmember Gray.
Great, thank you. I did want to say thank you to Councilmember Cutback and everybody else who's involved with the Rotary Field Bathrooms. Mike, and there's a ton of people involved, and certainly the mayor dragging that thing forward. It's been missing. Certainly I've been there and, you know, had to figure out where to go to the Boys and Girls Club or something. Now you don't have to, or now we won't have to. And for Mr. Sachs for finding the money, again, I think that's a great thing. And thanks to everybody who's involved with that. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilmember Cutback.
Thank you. Attended the community egg hunt this weekend at Lake Tai Park, and I just want to commend the Parks Department and all city staff. It was a great event, great weather. And just to really highlight, I was listening in as Denise was handling a customer complaint, a mom whose child had gotten kind of pushed over and run over, and Denise did a wonderful job handling the concerned mother, so I just want to relay that publicly. So I really appreciate the Parks Department and the event. It was a great event. Thank you.
Tried to get my kids down there, but a 15-year-old.
You were out there. I saw you push that kid down. I have to get you back.
Yeah. Some folks described it as the Great Egg Dash. So
it was crazy.
Lots of fun. Thank you. Councilmember Williams.
Just a question. Maybe this is for Gene. The format of our agenda seemed like it changed the online version a couple weeks ago. Is there a way we can get that simplified? It seems hard to read.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
No, wrong answer.
What happened is...
I know there is a way.
It's a programming... It's them, not us.
The website.
And Civic Plus.
Are they going to fix it?
They're working on it. Basically what happened was, if you notice, remember, I think it was February 19th meeting, they disappeared completely?
Yeah.
So they got that to work back, and had something to do with SSL certificates or something. And when they got that back, it reformatted the agendas, so it's in this way, and there's a ticket out there that they're working on. But it's nothing that we do that can make it that way. So, because we format it, and it doesn't care how we format it; it just does it the way it wants to do it.
I will please ask them to
move
that.
I know. I keep opening up the wrong attachments because it's kind of off.
Maybe if we sit there chatting.
Yeah.
Good escalation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Nothing for me.
Councilmember Graham.
So.
Staff, anything to report tonight? Jeff?
One item that we're bringing to council, a report anyway, we've talked about the Innovation Partnership Zone, and the City of Sultan and Snohomish Monroe have gone out, and we're in the process of retaining a consultant to help us with that, and we were lucky enough to book former Senator Jim Castema as the consultant that's going to take on the task. He actually wrote the legislation, IPZ legislation, and he's going to be a very valuable asset, I think, to the entire process. So without a doubt, he's brought some clarity to the situation and is bringing a fair amount of personal horsepower to our efforts here in the Valley. So more to follow.
Yeah. Thank you. The other mayors who I've spoken with regards to former senator coming on board are very excited about, as Jeff put it, both the knowledge, understanding, and the force which he brings to this process and moving this process forward. So good things ahead. Chief? Yeah. Diane, anything further?
They haven't rolled out the promo yet or any of the advertising, but mechanically you can now buy tickets to Monroe Music Fest either online or at City Hall. We've got it all set up to go now. And go to MonroeMusicFest.com.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. That was awesome. So, no, last Friday, I was invited, and so was Jeff Sachs, as well as to the Monroe High School, and there was a student leadership breakfast. And I understand they've been doing it for a few years now. And I have to say, it was so interesting. I really was impressed with the students. It's where you break them up with, you know, business professionals and community leaders and question answers and all that. And it was just a great experience. And if anyone hasn't had the opportunity, it's something that's really something that would impress you as well. So.
Thank you. Brandon, anything for me? City Administrator Brown.
Draft agenda for April 9th, 2013. Under new business, number one, we've got the introduction of 2014 to 2019 Transportation Improvement Program. Number two, set date to consider Planning Commission recommendation for Rosenthal Road rezone. Final action, we have the ordinance amending Chapter 18, MMC, sign code, second and final reading. Study session topics, we have the Public Works Schools presentation and department reports and draft agenda for April 16th, 2013. Any additions or deletions?
Anything on the extended? Sorry, Councilmember here.
Thank you. For a question from Mr. Brazel, is there a need for a meeting on the 23rd or those items that we could, Councilmember Gamble's not here tonight, so I'll speak on his behalf, right? Are there items that we can move to a different week rather than have the fourth meeting, or?
I would have to yield to Mr. Feilberg.
They can. The only thing is that we're trying to, you know, move projects along, and since it is a legally constituted council meeting, there are people out there waiting to take advantage of the Roosevelt Road rezone with submittals of development activity, which will set their projects back if we wait, you know, an additional 2 weeks to get to the summer. And also, I won't be here in May. So. But I think everything on there, plus the thing that I'm adding right now, are all mine. So.
Everybody else is fine.
That's it.
So now we see what that is.
Yeah.
So no, there's not a reason except for Brad. Okay. I'd certainly be open to moving those things. It's not too much of a burden for Brad, but again, that's just my opinion on that. We don't need to have a fourth meeting, but it is what it is, so thank you.
Yeah, you're saying move those to the 7th, or? Well, you really have to on the Roosevelt Road one. The other two could be the week before, Brad.
Because I mean, like, if you wanted, in order to consider any testimony that would be received at the public hearing on the 16th, we would need to wait till the 23rd to pass that.
To move everything off.
Well, our request has been, or suggestion has been made. Council, would you prefer to move it out to the 7th or have a fourth meeting? I see a head nod.
I would prefer to move it to the 7th, but.
You prefer a fourth meeting as well?
I'm just throwing numbers.
Yeah.
There's no meeting on the 30th, correct? So it's 2 there, right?
And then just for, you'll have to find someone to cover it all for me.
Correct.
Because I won't be here. So.
Jeff, everybody looked at Tim. Paul.
Yeah, we'll
do Paul this thing to the show.
Oh, I'm throwing it up. I mean, if it's a huge burden, then never mind.
Well, I tell you what, we don't have to do that tonight. No, we can think about it. And,
just
and next time, come back and confirm it. Okay. I
I do not have anything to report at this time, and I don't believe we need an executive session in a couple of minutes. Correct. All right. Then I would ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion made by Councilmember Gerian, seconded by Councilmember Camper to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?